Hello and welcome to White Noise Weekly, Episode 6. Wow, it's been a lot, Seth.
I know, man. We could call this Episode 7 if we really wanted to.
We'll call it 6.2, the last one we had a slight audio glitch on.
Take two.
Let's call it like something confusing, like 6.7, so like they think there's been multiple versions of what happened, but really it's just one.
6 Delta Prime to the 7.
6 Delta Prime 7.
Epsilon.
I just got done with a couple of my econ classes, right, for game theory, and I feel like they make up, like, some, like, okay, what's a Greek symbol we can use to make up something? And it's really confusing.
Well, that depends. Which ones haven't we used yet?
Well, it's funny, because, like, take a pi, right? Pi can mean profit, depending on what you're doing. It also mean the optimization function, right? And sometimes just means random chance. I don't understand why pi is different in 3 different econ classes. That doesn't make any sense to me. But I do know is, I've thought about this for a while. If I ever made a video game, right? I would make a video game called, like, Revenge of the something, whatever, I don't know. Like, Revenge of the Droids.
You got a good start.
Like, listen. Revenge of the Droids 7, and I'd release it. And people would be like, well, what was Revenge of the Droids 1 through 6? And they'd have no idea that that was the first game. They'd be confused, like, why is it Revenge of the Droids 7? Then my next game would be Revenge of the Droids 2, just to really fuck with people.
It's actually funny that I am, there's a YouTuber that I like to watch a lot, and they do a...
Please tell me it's not PewDiePie.
Oh, no, it's not PewDiePie. It's,
PewDiePie!
Yeah, no. Kill me, please.
You're not a 10-year-old boy, right?
Yeah, no, kill me, please. But he does a playthrough of a video game tycoon. Or, you know, video game dev tycoon. To where you, like, make a video game and stuff. And he's like, all right, what we're going to do is we've released the 4th one, but now we're going to release the 6th one.
And, that's pretty funny.
And if, you know, people are going to ask where the 5th one goes, it is, that's the riddle.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Like, I don't know, I think it's always fun to mess with people. I'm one of those people where, like, for Easter one day, I'm going to hide, like, I don't know, 9 eggs of whatever color for each of my kids. But I'm going to tell them there's 10 of them, right? Or maybe I'll just, like, there's 10 and there's 1 gold egg. Whoever finds the gold egg gets $100. But I'm not going to hide the gold egg anyway, right?
My favorite's the class prank where you release pigs 1, 2, and 4.
Yeah. So anyways,
like, you label 1, 2, and 4. Yeah.
So I'll never hide the gold egg. And then, like, 4 months later, I'll randomly put it somewhere just to mess with them. So, like, that way they're like, oh my gosh, so the next year when I don't hide the egg, they're going to be tearing the house apart to find it. And I just... And, like, my favorite April Fool's joke we ever did was... We had cupcakes, right? We brought genuinely normal cupcakes to class, me and my friend. After people ate them, we said we had laxatives in them, right? We never put laxatives in them, Seth. And yet the amount of people who thought they were sick and had to use the bathroom was really entertaining.
I know. It's the mental games, man. Those are the ones.
So we had an interesting conversation about earlier in the last one. So David's not here today. David, unfortunately, he's a huge Halo fan, right? And his love of Halo is so strong, he decided to try to recreate Halo 3 in its entirety, and unfortunately he perished at the end of Halo 3 during the Warthog scene where he's like racing to the thing to sacrifice his life, and it's really tragic, but of course he'll be back because in Halo 3, you know, he doesn't actually die, unfortunately.
Yeah,
so.
No, he'll be back, you know, because Bungie's like, oh crap, we need to make another one.
Absolutely, we'll make Crappy Reach, which will change the multiplayer everyone loves into Call of Duty style.
Or we'll, you know, we'll make an RTS for, you know, the console, see if it'll work.
Worse. God, that game is not good. It's really not good.
Which is strange, because, like, I don't know, you're probably just as much, if not more, an RTS fan than I am. I mean, I was so indebted to the RTS one, just because I played Warcraft so much, that I loved it so much, that I, just because the name was attached to an MMO.
You like Warcraft 3, especially? Did you play a lot?
Yeah, yeah. Warcraft 3, Frozen Throne, I got maybe, holy
That's
crap.
One of my favorites.
300, 400 hours of gameplay into that
That's
thing.
One of my favorite stories of any game I've really ever played, which is amazing, of RTS. I guess the story of Arthas and Lich King, just it's so great. And I think one of the things I really enjoyed about the game was, I was a kid, my dad taught me how to play games, not by teaching me, but just by beating me. Like, well, my dad did not put mercy, so Warcraft 3 was the first game I could consistently beat my dad on as, like, 11 or 12-year-old. That's when he knew he was in trouble.
Yeah, no, I did the same thing. You know, my dad was really big into Warcraft 3, and that was kind of a bonding moment where we'd play each other. Well, usually we were on the same team more often than we played each other.
Oh, no, my dad just straight up beat me. In the video game. Not just beat me. He beat me in the video game. Well, make sure that's clear.
Yeah, no, we're not admitting to anything on the podcast here. human resources.
By the way,
need to make
this show. I want to you know, paraphrase this or say this ahead of time here that this show is brought to you by a Pinnacle and a Crown Royal. Cheers.
I know whatever's in my cup. We'll just say that.
You know, Dave's not here. Video games, all podcasts. So maybe Game of Thrones a little bit later, and some alcohol. It'll be good times.
Yeah,
good times.
It'll be great.
So you've been playing Halo.
Yeah, I've been playing Halo again, or it's the kind of thing that class is done. I'm officially unemployed.
Congratulations. You know, don't you, like, I was talking to David, right? And he's got a master's degree now in finance. I was like, he was really proud because he was kind of worried about his last class. I was like, congratulations. You worked so hard to get that master's so you can now be unemployed and job hunting for the next couple months. You really earned it, pal.
Yeah, no, I've got a couple leads. You know, not that any of these people care about my career choices and my career path.
But you're not doing this full time?
But, well, now I've got a lot of free time, and, you know, I don't really feel guilty dipping it into video games so much anymore, where, you know, when school's going on, oh, I got a final, let's play Mortal Kombat 10 instead.
Or... I imagine it's always, like, a fun thing where it's like, I'm going to law school, thankfully, I don't have to worry about job hunting for a while, and then hopefully after law school, if I'm still looking for a job after law school, then I want a refund on the cost, obviously, but it's gotta be fun, because it's like, okay, look, I literally can't hunt for jobs anymore today. Video games, yes, like, you won't even feel guilty about it, you just, yeah. There's nothing more you can do that day.
Yeah, no, and it's the kind of thing that I've always been pretty good about juggling my hobbies, you know, video games, TV, radio, I got a lot of different things that I usually try to do with video games. Nude posing. Actually.
Nude posing, mostly. Yeah. That's right. I'm the sculpture. That makes sense. Yeah.
But I've been playing Halo again since, you know, now I've got this free time. I'm replaying the Master Chief Collection in its entirety. You know, Halo 1 to Halo 4. I've never played 3 or 4.
By the way, say what you said last time about you not playing Halo 3 or 4 ever, but giving me crap for not playing Halo 2.
A couple podcasts ago, I gave you a lot of crap for never playing 2. And a lot of that was just based on
Halo 3 is the best one, Seth.
I wouldn't know, but of the Halos I've played, Halo 2 is the best, and that's because I haven't played the third or the fourth one, which the fourth one, from what I've heard, isn't going to be a problem.
Look, man, if you like, I think it's 343, I get what they were trying to do with Halo 4, but, like, okay, I think Cortana's already way overly sexualized, in my opinion, the way they portray it in the first three games, you know? But in the fourth game, they really take a whole nother level. It's like a love story between Master Chief and Cortana is the best way to put it. I don't want to spoil it for you. That's pretty much the best I can put
it. I'm a guy who's, you know, function over fashion. I need to see how it's done. Not,
I mean, if Cortana was Scarlett Johansson, you know, like, from her, that'd be a different story.
Yeah, but that's why I've always never been too offended by spoilers, because it's not about the things that are said or the events. Because really, ideas...
Master Chief dies at the end of 3.
At this... Well, really, at this juncture in all fiction, every idea has been used before. And now it's important of seeing how it's done.
Like in Game of Thrones, when Jon Snow shoots Mancera the Bone Arrow, that's from Last Mohicans.
Yeah, I mean, and even beyond...
Daniel Day-Lewis did that first. And The Simpsons.
But yeah, you know what? What was it? That Simpsons episode where they did like the one
Simpsons
about
the... Simpsons did it.
No, the one about the bird and it's like dark and Halloween. I feel like there was a poem. You know, The Raven, I think it was called. I feel like it was done before.
Yeah. What? Really? once upon a midnight dreary
as I wandered weak and weary.
Yeah. I just felt like I did a panorameter, you know, is exactly, it's actually kind of impressive. You like go through like what he was trying to do there. And then I sit there like trying to study and I'm like, wow, I'm just a nerd. That's what I immediately think about that one. But back to Halo. So there's some fun glitches in Halo I've encountered. I don't know if you've really done anything.
I haven't really done enough. I haven't really been pushing it to the limit. I've been, you know, running down the lit corridor to where the end of my quest is. I've been very, very linear in my tackling of this game, just because I want, you know, I want to see the campaign, I want to see what it is, and if it holds up, and that's pretty much my lone purpose in playing it again.
That's how I say. Have you been playing between, like, switching back and forth? You get an achievement if you switch back and forth between the old one and the remastered.
And I've been keeping up with that. I've, like... You know, I've actually just, like, programmed myself, like, mentally to keep pushing select at times where it makes sense. I've been doing it during the cutscenes, too. I'm not sure.
I'll put it this way. I'm glad I don't have to take any regular medicine, because I already, like, when I have to take antibiotics for every reason, I forget whether I took it or not, you know? That happens to me, like, even the gummy vitamins I eat every morning, I don't remember if I ate them or not, right? So, Halo Remastered, I did all of them but 2, right? 7 and 8, I apparently didn't do
just,
it.
Just for the listeners, there's an achievement. If you,
like I said, go back and forth on Remastered and a Classic, right? Remastered looks beautiful. That's a different note, though.
It's most noticeable in the cutscenes. The cutscenes are just... It's ridiculous.
But anyway, so we were doing the part... Right? So I did it correctly on 8, which is 2 betrayals, right? On the library, I'm pretty sure it's the library is the one I didn't do it on, because I'm at 95%, and that's the one I've had the most issues with, like, an online connectivity, because I did all this co-op with my friend, And maybe that's why I've had so many issues. But anyways, I went through it in part time. Part of the sole purpose was to get the achievement, but also to go back and remaster it in Classic. I didn't do it still. So, like I said, if I had medication, I'd be screwed because I'd never remember. But anyway, some interesting glitches I ran into, right? First of all, there are guns in the Classic version and or remaster that don't appear in the other one. So sometimes my friend's like, dude, there's a pistol. You can pick it up right there. Like, I don't see a pistol. And I go in the Classic and I see the pistol.
Can you pick up the pistol?
Yeah, you can, but only in Classic. Which is weird how, like, one or the other will have guns, the other one, right? Another glitch I frequently run into, right, is me and Brian, you have the same score on co-op. You have the absolute same score on co-op. Except on some levels. For some reason, our scores are different. There's no reason behind that,
so
right?
So he's playing in remastered and you're playing...
No, he's playing on the Classic.
But you're playing different.
I'm playing remastered, yeah. But sometimes he has a different score than me. Not often. It happened twice of the 10 levels. But the library, he got par score. I didn't. The library is the one... Because I'm really good at killing the Flood from like games like Left 4 Dead and stuff. I'm actually almost as good, if not better than him, only on the Flood levels. So I earned that par score for him. And he gets credit for it at the end, which kind of pissed me off a little bit. Because I don't get that achievement for that. I'll have to go back at that one later.
Let's see. Of the speaking of par, like I think I've only done the first level on par because like well, I wasn't that far on it. Let's try and get this one. I've never really been that uber about it, I guess.
People who don't know, par score, they set like a score you have to achieve. If you're on easy, you can't get it because it's too easy, and like if you're on legendary, you'll die too much to get the score. So somewhere between normal and hard, or whatever the hard one's called, I've only ever done legendary.
I think it's expert.
Expert, yeah. That's the one you pretty much have to get in on for the most part, one of those two levels. And part-time is essentially go on easy, you run through it as fast as you can, and it's really not that hard if you can just do that.
Yeah, and I got the first one, the first level. I got that one par, but then at that point I didn't really care. I think I missed one of the pars by like a minute. The one where the Arbiter goes in to the get the icon. One where you have to like open the pistons and keep going down. Okay. That's one.
Remember, I've never played Halo 2. I've just played Halo 1, 3, and 4.
I forget the level name, but that's the one that I missed par by 1 minute. And I felt a little bad about that, but you know.
So the other glitch I think is kind of interesting. I've never seen it myself, but it's apparently a real thing. Sometimes on Halo 2, right? Only in Halo 2, because if you die, you go back to the checkpoint, right? Sometimes the checkpoints will desync, which means one you and your friend will have different checkpoints, right? That's weird. So you'll spawn back to one and spawn to the other. However, you're not just spawning to one or the other. You're both spawning to both of them. So there are essentially four people. There's four different Master Chiefs in the game, essentially.
So what is...
So you move your guy at your checkpoint and on his screen. You're still moving it, but like you'll be running into walls and stuff, right? And you can't die. So, like, what... Essentially, you're gonna... Like, it's ridiculous how messed up that is where there's two copies of what you're doing.
Well, yeah, and I'm kind of... I don't know. It's... I'm kind of glad that they did that, I guess, or kept it. That just means that... That reaffirms that what they did, which is they just, you know, recreated the existing engine with an extra brushstroke.
Yes, but unfortunately...
But that's kind of what people were asking for.
Unfortunately, it's a broken game still. As much as I love it, it's a broken game.
Yeah, well...
But I still keep playing it. It's Halo.
Such is life, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's get into Game of Thrones this week. This is probably...
#transition.
#transition, yeah. Oh, yeah, such is life. So, Game of Thrones. All men must die. this has probably been my favorite episode of the season. And I think the one thing I really like this episode, and I'm not one of those people who's going to, like, look up who the director is and tell you, oh, the director, this guy's name. You know, that's not me, right? But I think whoever directed this episode, episode 4, did a phenomenal job. Because the way they had two scenes really well done, in my opinion, which is the religious militant, you know, the different sparrows, like, going through, the way they had those, like, quick-cutting scenes, you know, that really displayed attention, I thought was phenomenally done. And the same thing when the Sons of the Harpies are going through attacking. I love both those scenes. I thought they were masterclassly done.
Well, I'm even going to point out probably my favorite scene of the week, which is something that we haven't really seen before, is the scene between Stannis and his daughter. So the fact that they could have scenes that are, you know, vicious and bloody like that, but also kind of introduce some tenderness that isn't usually seen is also... I agree wholeheartedly that there's just kind of a variety of different things that they did this week that they hadn't really done before.
Mark Mylod, is the director, because I'm going to name his name anyways, now that I just said I don't look this up. I think I was listening to Hollywood Perspectives. It was pretty funny. They pointed out something I never thought about before, how often they'll be like, instead of just telling someone asks a question, instead of just answering it, they'd be like, well then, back in my day, and they'll tell this like long, elaborate story before getting to the point. That is what Stannis did. That is what he did. He had to like do his long story to convey a simple question.
Yeah, no. Do you think I'm a monster daddy? He never said yes. He never said no. So
let me... Here, Doctor, let me go on my long story describing something that happened long ago.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the Sopranos thing, that, you know, they make the audience do the work, you know. It's never yes, it's never no, it's, you know, you make your own conclusion off of what I say. It's something that makes shows like this, and really just television shows in general, really rewarding experiences, because it doesn't do all the work for you. It doesn't jump through, you have to jump through the hoops yourself. As someone watching the show, you're being rewarded for watching the show. Because, you know, you catch this detail and you come to the conclusion yourself.
So, the ending of the episode is probably the big deal, in my opinion, of, I guess, like, what, you know, happened, what we're going to remember. And this is, all those people, I'm amazed I didn't know this happened, because the first four episodes are leaked, and it wasn't spoiled. To me, that's amazing. I really can't believe that.
I also think the Game of Thrones people, like, leaked it themselves, because they don't really care.
Maybe that's why. I don't know how I'd agree with that, but that's kind of interesting. Because... Anyways, the ending of the episode, right, you have the Sons of the Heartbeast attacking, right, and the Lothian Slayers are surrounded, led by Grey Worm, right, you know? And I love it, because I love the way the show is continuing on what George R. R. Martin done. This is completely new to the show, not from the books at all. But the having Sir Barristan, which, let me tell you a story about Rhaegar and his ability to play music, and he gave it to the poor, and he gave it to, you know, an orphanage, and we got drunk. What a happy story, which immediately, of course, meant he was going to die afterwards. I don't know if he's dead, but that story signifies your... It's like, we'll call him Ned Jr. We'll teach him how to ride a horse. Do you really want to do that? I really want to. Of course Rob was going to die after she said that. That's how Game of Thrones work. Seth, let me tell you this really happy story. I'm going to die. That's how it works. Which is why I'm keeping things dark and gritty here on the show.
Yeah, no,
so I'll be safe, but...
Yeah, no, I don't really have much to add. I mean, it was what it was. It's... Things aren't going well in Meereen by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like the fighting pits are going to open, because one, we already saw that what happened, the tension between the slaver and slaves when she executed that guy. It showed you what a peak everything was, a mess, and how her idealism was just not working. What she wants, what she thought.
I don't even think it's that her idealism isn't working.
Her naivety? She's just naive?
I think she's just so damn distracted, you know, with between whatever she's doing with... She just very rarely
sees... She's raising teenage dragons. That's not an easy job for a mother,
yeah,
you know?
I just... Every time I see Daenerys, she's not thinking, not really doing anything about what's going on. You know, she... We saw the execution, and she felt bad about that. Oh, no, what am I going to do? And then she didn't really address it. And it's just strange and, you know, kind of funny that now Tyrion's about to be thrust into this, thinking that there's a good situation, and he's going to, you know, realize that that couldn't be even further from the truth.
Well, as Hizdah Zolorak, I think is his name. I don't know why they make up the name this complex. That guy, though, he wants the fighting pits open. They're going to be open now. That's why I definitely know that for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jorah, for some reason, was tossed into the fighting pits. I'm not saying that because I've seen a trailer scene that has Jorah fighting in a pit. I'm just saying it's very likely that him fighting in a pit means the fighting pits are going to be open.
Yeah, no, that seems to be the logical course of action. And the people want the fighting pit open. There was a scene in the trailer that looked like someone fighting in a pit. May have been a fighting pit. It may have been a basement. Oh, wait, no.
Maybe it was a pit of happiness. the sword was the sharing stick, because they didn't have a sharing stick, so it's a sword.
Yeah, we know. It could be any
He's
other
not
things.
Fighting him. They're talking it out. They're about to hug, really. But the other thing was, so like I said, I love the way they confide conventions, which I was getting to, right? Oh, you know, here's Barristan, the gallant knight here, saved it. Nope, he's dead.
Well,
that's Game of Thrones.
That's something that George R. R. Martin's always done. He's always tried to dismantle those.
And Benioff and Weiss seem to be trying to copy that, because, like I said, that's not what Martin didn't do that. This is all Benioff and Weiss.
Well, I think we're kidding ourselves if we don't think Martin at least has some say, because it is still...
Oh, no, he's bitter. He's like, oh, this character... He had an interview recently. He was like, oh, I just wrote this awesome twist for a character and it's too late to be in the show. It was ha ha ha. Because he's just so bitter about the fact that he can't write books at any remote speed anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, I think people are going to... I think the show helps him more than he realizes.
It absolutely does. It's actually funny.
I don't know why he's bitter, because the show, I won't say resurrected his career, but it definitely took it to a new level.
He went from, like,
interest and intrigue.
He went from, like, a cult following from the books to millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. So.
Basically someone who's being asked to attend every single, you know, geek convention there is.
Yeah.
You know, he before he went to maybe one or two a year, now he's booked for
He wasn't going on Conan O'Brien before the show came out, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of funny is, like, I think at this point, though, the reason this book series is taking so long to write, one, it's just way too complicated and impossible at this point between what books in 4 and 5 did, you know? Because books 1 through 3 are pretty much a complete arc and story. It's the downfall of the Starks along with the rise of the Lannisters and downfall of the Lannisters, right? Those are the two families they focus on. And then after that, it's like, okay, here are the Greyjoys and here are the Martells.
Yeah, the Greyjoys are now... And here are the Sandsnakes. The Greyjoys are on top now. They need to be dethroned. I'm assuming that looks like the way it's going to go. Stannis is up top. He's going to eventually... I mean, I'm just guessing. He's going to eventually take everything over because he's the power.
Don't worry, Seth. The pizza is coming. The dragons are going to come eventually. It's just...
Yeah, and like, meanwhile, Daenerys is going to eventually figure stuff out. I mean, there's like all this stuff that is going to happen. And we see that it's going to happen.
I just want to hear more stories about Rhaegar, you know, playing his instruments. Just that's what, you know, all this stuff's going on Marine. Did you know that Rhaegar and I used to get drunk from the money he won? I don't know.
That's just like, what is it? Kevin Hart does his stand-up bit or whatever, where it's like my uncle, you know, is like, I wasn't the one that was sucking dick for money. Yeah, don't worry, your dad was with me there. It's just like, no, none of that.
I was not expecting that reference there, but...
I mean, it makes sense. Yeah, I understand.
And I love Jorah. Jorah literally, without saying a word, gets completely not only dissected by Tyrion... but kind of shame. And all, but the thing is, he gets to hit him. That's the funny thing. He's just like, whatever.
Yeah, no, like, just that scene alone where, like, Tyrion's like, oh!
I'm not gonna lie. I love Tyrion. Tyrion has provided the best moments of the show, in my opinion, to some extent, you know, between what he's done in season one, but being just, you know, joking around and stuff.
I think it's because he's... maybe, depending on how you feel about some of the others, but I think that Peter Dinklage is the best actor on the show.
I would say that's him and Charles Dance have always been the two most endearing to me in terms of their performances.
Charles Dance, man.
His screen time, his performance is just amazing. Even when he was a dead body, I was like, wow, that stage presence. But he must love the show if he's willing to fly out to Europe for that one. Okay, he gets a free trip to Europe, probably. I'm sure he would gladly go to Europe if
he lives
to be a dead
in
body.
Europe,
yeah.
I figure.
Yeah, he's England. Yeah, he's like, okay, yeah, I'll go out to Spain or whatever. Yeah, no problem. Anyways, season two, like I said, he's the Hand of King. It's wonderful. Season three, you get some of the more interesting dark stuff. You know, Master Coin.
And there's the scene between. Are you meaning Tracking Tyrion now?
Yeah, in season four. Yeah, Tyrion. Yeah, season
I
four.
We were on the Charles Dance
and then
wagon.
Season four. I love the Charles Dance wagon. I think he should have won every Emmy for every year he's been in. But season four, you had the phenomenal moment. You know, as him like as a prisoner and all that stuff was so great. His scowling. You know, at the court, the fake trial, whatever. And now I'm kind of bored of him this season. Yes, it's kind of fun his banter.
I think a lot of it. I won't. Not to interrupt you. I think that. One of the reasons we're bored is because we're kind of supposed to be bored. He just relapsed, I think, a little bit, you know, in terms of being the silly drunk or whatever that he was before, where you thought that maybe he'd put that life behind him just so he could, you know, capitalize from his positions of power, or, you know, he didn't even have time to drink while he was in the dinghy. But now that he's kind of on his own, he's free. He's not really absolved of all of his, you know, whatevers of the life behind him. But, like, I think part of it is just because it's actually what freedom is like. If that makes sense.
I guess, but it's like, to me, he's been not really a character for 3.5 of the episodes. I think the part of him at the brothel where he just couldn't go through with...
Yeah, that was
really was a real powerful character moment, right? And the other 3 halves, like, do you have wine? I want wine.
I'm gonna go pee
really
off
care.
The world.
I'm gonna pee off the world. Varys, I'll be fine, even though this is the stupidest thing ever. Which, I don't know why Varys allowed him to do that, right? And then it's like, oh... I can tell by that sword there's a bear on it. You're clearly Jorah Mormont. Like, his scenes have not been as important or interesting, but I like him. I like, you know, I like Dinklage. He's great. I just don't particularly care for this right now.
And really, even if he isn't really important right now, it's still, like, the fact that he was able to identify Jorah just being, you know, what, half drunk and, like, after being beaten across the head just kind of shows that how... I want powerful is the wrong word, but just how important to the world, not necessarily to the story, but it's just, we're starting to realize how important to the world he is and just what exactly is going to Daenerys, if that makes sense, if the story progresses the way we think it will.
Okay, so let's just real quick, I want to make sure we run through different things.
Sure.
Mace Tyrell, I love how stupid he is. He's just a bumbling idiot who's like, oh, what a great honor for me to go there. Because, like, everything's like...
I'm being manipulated, but thank you.
He doesn't even know that, because he's such a... How is his daughter, like, Marjorie? How is, like, his mother, you know, Lady Olenna?
I don't understand.
Think
it's skipped a generation.
Clearly. Or, like, he got dropped on his head. I see Lady Olenna's pretty cool. Maybe she was smoking a lot of pot while she was, like... like, you know, pregnant with him. I don't know, but it just seems like something she would do. And the way he's turned out, he's got to be something wrong with him during it, you know?
I guess speaking of that, are we pro Tommen or anti
Tommen? Oh, of course, we like Tommen. Tommen's a sweet young boy, and it's like, it's kind of funny. He's like, you saw he's a good guy. He's a good guy to the point where he did not want to cause violence at all with those sparrows, you know?
Yeah, the religious it's the kind of thing that, like, after watching that exchange with the sparrows, that's probably the wise thing to do. We don't gain anything out of
Kong. As Charles Dance said, one of my favorite scenes of What Makes a Good King. I love that scene. Can we just talk about how great Charles Dance is more, please?
We're talking about a character who's not on the show. It doesn't seem economic.
Good point, yeah. Anyways, so my favorite thing about that whole scene with Mace Tyrell and Cersei was, oh, Meryn Trant, you go with him. Oh, okay, I see what you're doing. You literally just want Arya to kill him. That's the whole purpose of sending him out there, is to have Arya cross off someone off her list that most people don't even know who he is. That was the entire point of that whole exchange, I think. I'm pretty sure. How do we get Mace Tyrell? I mean, how do we get, you know, Meryn Trant off the list? We'll send Mace Tyrell, and it's always gold when he's on screen. And then, it's interesting, because we've talked about this a little bit off air, but Cersei is clearly going, okay, I've lost state and religion. She says the two pillars, right? I've lost state. Let's go to the church. And that's why she armed the, you know, already kind of fanatical, extremist, you know, religious sparrows, right?
Yeah, she's not even, I don't even think she's thinking about how do I get my job back anymore. She's thinking of how can I make the most amount of discord as I get ousted.
How do you retain any kind of power she has? And obviously, what's funny is she pisses off Margaery pretty strong, and Margaery's super upset. No more sex for young Tommen. That's all I know for sure. His wife's unhappy. And because, like, poor Ser Loris, but, you know, on the plus side, I was able to almost replicate Ser Loris on Bloodborne when I made that character, which I'll get into after we're done with this.
I guess we can also talk about really quick, I think we've talked about almost everything at this point.
Well, there's just two more main sections.
Let's talk about Jaime and Bronn.
I love their scenes together. They're real, like, bros, you know? So how do you want to go? Bronn, boring, you know, like, I just want to be bored, which is great. I think, you know, there's a lot of interesting characters who don't really get the way they, you know, they want to go out.
It's just kind of funny. I think that they're both by the book, if that makes sense, in terms of what they are, where, you know,
Bronn is
the affable rogue, Jaime's this, you know, knight.
I love how, like, he used, like, his hand to block the sword.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Bronn's like, let's see. I could take three. Can you, like, what were you? I could take one if he's at disadvantage, so he knocks him off the horse to make sure you get the guy. Bronn's so great, though. I love Bronn. And pairing them together is the smartest thing I think Benioff and Weiss did. I don't particularly care for the Sand Snakes, because I think they kind of go against, like, what this world really means.
I think that it's, their whole introduction has been a misstep, I think, so far, just because I don't think that they've been introduced the right way. Or at least in terms
let
of...
Let me tell you a story about me.
We know they're important, but, like, there's nothing really tying them to what else is going on outside of maybe three lines of dialogue, you know? We need to avenge our father. That's really all that we know
about
them.
It's either Oberyn or Nymeria. She's like, let me tell you a story about how I'm agreeing with you to show the fact that, like, you know, like, I'm going, it's, to me, it seems like almost like fan service-y, like they're cool. You know, now that the Red Barber gone, they're cool, but it's like, the notion of revenge is already kind of been seen throughout the show. This sounds kind of like an add-on that looks cool. You know, it's kind of like all the scenes they've had with Brienne in some regards. I love the scene with Brienne and Podrick, you know, where she tells, like, why, like, she, like you know, Renly begin with. It's a powerful scene. But a lot of her other stuff's kind of like fluff. Like, all right, we're going to go ride on the horses and being chased by Peter Baelish's men. And it's cool. It's action-y. But it's fluff. And that's what the, you know, the Sand Snakes, because interesting enough to me, Game of Thrones is best as a nuanced kind of political struggle, more so than action, cool excitement.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that completely. I know that it's I'm conflicted though. Like, I know the Sand Snakes have something coming though, but, like, in terms of right now, they aren't. They don't feel like they're integral. They don't feel like, you know, they do feel like fluff, I agree.
Real quick, before I get to what I think is the most important scene of the entire show this week, which, as someone who's read the books, is why I think that. But anyways, so I like the Jon Snow at the wall denying Melisandre. And then, like I said, I agree. The Shireen Stannis scene is the best scene in the show, you know, for this episode at least. Maybe the best that this entire season so far. It's a very powerful scene. I love it. I've always loved Shireen. She is great. Like, when she sings that song in the credits, like, that just makes me happy and smile. And she's, like, one of the few genuinely likable characters. And Stannis is one of the few genuinely...
He's really dry.
It's weird. You don't want to... It's kind of iffy rooting for a guy with Melisandre on his side. And yet, he's, like, the guy you kind of want to root for.
It's the kind of thing that, in terms of... Outside of maybe Jon Snow, I think that Stannis is the closest closest, I guess, foil to what Ned was.
Kinda.
Like, there's this over sense of justice. There's just, you know, I don't think Stannis has done something that isn't honorable just
yeah,
yet.
he's completely by the... Even him wanting to be king is because he's the rightful king, not because he wants to be king.
Yeah, he's the best general, but he's not, like, bloodthirsty. There's just a lot of really things that, like, we should hate him, but for some reason we don't because he's got these certain traits, and one of them is loving his daughter.
By the way, before I get to I think it's the most important scene, I think Grey Worm probably lived because the way they showed him, like, struggle whatever over to them. I think Barristan dramatically is probably dead, but he did not get his throat slit, so maybe they both live. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just going to be kind of useless for a little while. Maybe they both lived. Maybe they both died. I think at least Grey Worm lived. I'm going to say probably they both lived.
I think Grey Worm's kind of important just because he's, you know, he represents Daenerys' army.
And also, if Missandei's not, like, with Grey Worm anymore, you know, then that's probably an issue. But finally, Sansa and Peter Baelish in the crypts. Another very powerful scene. They kind of retelling a same story we've heard before on the show. But I think this one's especially powerful and important.
Yeah, no, I think that what happens next for Sansa is really kind of... It's really intriguing just because, you know, I think she's out for blood in her marrying with Ramsay.
Evil Ramsay.
Yeah, evil Ramsay.
He makes an appearance in the first episode of the Game of Thrones video game. That's the only one I've played so far, and I absolutely hate him in that, too.
Yeah, no, and it's really interesting because I still am a little... I'm a little hesitant to embrace the Baelish-Sansa dynamic. I am not sure whether or not I'm on board with Sansa. I think that... I'm not sure that what she's making a lot of sense right now in her decisions, but I think that this is, you know... I'm talking in circles, but go ahead and, you know, tell me what I'm supposed to think.
Okay, so essentially, I think what Sansa's realizing here, right, is that she pretty much can't do anything right now in the current situation. But with power, being in the North especially, her name has a certain power to it. I think the scene where the old woman says to her about how the North remembers kind of sums up the whole North's attitude in a nutshell. You know, that letter they sent to Stannis, how the little 10-year-old in charge of the of Mormont, Bear Island right now, you know, because she's like the last one left, whatever, like yeah. The, you know, not sending men because, you know, all hell King Rob and John Loft or whatever.
Just because Sansa doesn't feel like she's got a backer, I can guarantee you that if she says, "Hey, I'm gonna kill the guy who killed my brother," if that's cool with y'all, I can guarantee a lot of people get on board.
And it's one of those things, like, Littlefinger, as much as you want to despise him, he kind of just wants Sansa to be Catelyn, you know? I think he probably has some grand scheme to marry her eventually, you know, probably. That's why he keeps kissing her, is my thought. But, like, he's trying to put her in the best position possible, in a nutshell.
I'll say this about Baelish, about Littlefinger.
By the way, Littlefinger may be my favorite alive character.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, I understood this episode to me just gleaned so much on what I thought I knew about Littlefinger, and now I understand his character so much. This episode is the one where I understood him the most, because the one line that he said was, you know, "I'm a betting man. You know, a betting man would put his money here, and it just so happens I'm a betting man." It's a guy that Baelish doesn't know everything, but, like, he knows enough.
And then he says that in the episode before that a little bit, you know, when talking to Lord Bolton. He's, like, talking about how, like, every move's a gamble. But you're right, he's, like, he doesn't really know. But what he does know is this is the situation where Stannis takes over, Sansa's the northerner that'll help, you know. And it's a great position.
There's also, like, some dramatic irony with that, too, or whatever. It's like, Sansa's like, "You don't know that Stannis is coming." He's like, "Oh, I've got a good enough idea." And it's funny because as the Watcher, we know he's coming.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, if Stannis doesn't win, she's still going to be the war in the north. Like, it's still there, right? She has a position to take revenge regardless. So he's putting her in the best position possible because, like I said, I think his future plan is, like, to marry her or something, or either that
if,
or...
If only they kept in touch with Stannis, you know, where Stannis is pushing for Jon Snow to be war in the north.
By the way, how much would you love a scene between Lord Bolton and Stannis? That would be the best, because both those guys are such stout British men, you know, and their prestige and their great acting, whatever. I'd love to see that. But anyway, so that's not even the most important part of that scene, right? The story about Lyanna and Rhaegar is really the one I find most fascinating, right? Because pretty much it's kind of like the back to what Daenerys thinks, right? We don't really know what happened 15 years ago, right? But we do know that Daenerys just finally recently learned through Barristan that her father was the Mad King. Those weren't lies. Those are true, you know? So it's always interesting to go back to that story where Littlefinger kind of tells what happens, right? And Sansa's like, well, she, you know, he got kidnapped. I mean, she got kidnapped, right, inside the war, right? You know, she got raped, whatever. And it's Littlefinger's like, mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like there. He doesn't really say anything about it, right? And I think that scene's important because the misconceptions of what we believe sort of in the show and the truths that actually happen. And the way things are framed historically, like that Jaime's the Kingslayer, not necessarily true. Why Brienne became the way she is, pretty fascinating. And this story kind of represents exactly what the show has been doing this whole time, where the way you can frame things has a big image of what people really think, but it's not necessarily true. Yeah. And that will be a big important part, I think, later in the future, that right now is not super clear.
You know, I can understand that. I can buy that, you know, a lot of what we know about characters, like, you know, is John's very shamed? Is he, you know, is his shame actually that big a deal? This, that, and the other thing. I mean, there's a lot of, but you know, just with that notion in mind, there's a lot that we can kind of think that doesn't necessarily, you know, go with what we've been shown. I'd agree with that.
Anyways, let's get to more video game stuff. I've been, so let me tell you my story about Dark Souls and me, okay?
Okay.
Last summer, I decided that I finally, it's kind of funny, I told my dad to play the game, and I told my friends about the game, because I heard it got good reviews on Metacritic, and it was cheap at the time, whatever. I didn't know what the game was about. I just thought it was a long RPG. I didn't realize how hard it was, whatever, which is amazing for a game that came out as long ago as it did, in like 2011, that was one of the hardest games ever. I didn't know that, though, 3 years after its release, right? Or like 2.5, so they both quit on separate occasions. I didn't know why, but they both quit. They didn't enjoy it, okay? Then I realized not too long after that Dark Souls was one of the hardest games ever, right? So it was a free game of gold last June. I decided to get the gear. July, maybe. I'm like hiccuping. Mountain Dew and vodka. Great combo. Anyway, so I got the game for gold, and I beat that game after 50-something grueling hours. I beat the DLC, too. I fell in love with it. I just loved it, but I also hated it because of how hard it was, right? But I don't know, toward the end of the game, once I really started getting it, everything clicked, I was just rolling through it, you know, I beat the last boss one try, et cetera, right? I played Dark Souls 2, and then I was really excited to play Bloodborne. So my dad started replaying Dark Souls after he finally 100% Dying Light, and he got back to Dark Souls after he stopped playing Anno Londo. Or maybe Sense Fortress, I don't remember which one. I think he stopped Anno Londo because he messed up a bonfire. So I wanted to show my girlfriend the game, and I went to New Game Plus, I just started playing it, showing her, and I couldn't stop playing it, right? So I get about, I don't know, decently through New Game Plus, you know? And I was trying to get all the achievements. My game, my power, like, kind of flickered or whatever at one point, and it's corrupted the save file. Because you have to quit out using their menu. Because they don't want you, like, dying or something and quitting and restarting, you know? So my corrupted my save file. A 70-something hours, level 111, corrupted my game file. That's Dark Souls trying to screw me over once again, not even in the game. Just that's the nature of Dark Souls. But I don't want to let Dark Souls beat me, so I then played another 30-something hours through the game, restarting over. It's amazing how good I am in that game now. But it's like, damn it, Dark Souls, just you had to screw me over once again. This game is so sadistic that it's going to get rid of my save file and then make me want to keep playing it anyways. So I've now put over 100 hours in a game without even being on New Game Plus yet. But I've got 48 to 51 achievements, so not bad there, but so eventually you're going to play the game, I'm sure. Just, it's...
Yeah, no, I've heard so much. You know, I've got my best friend is the kind of guy that's beaten, like, all of them three times through. He's platinumed the trophy twice because he had to get it on his PS3 and his other PS3. I mean, it's kind of...
it's and kinda... his other PS3, yeah.
but no, I mean,
that's like 2.5 playthroughs. As I've learned, it's 2.5 playthroughs because I have all of them, but all the weapons, all the miracles... And getting the dumbest achievement you can ever have in a game, getting all the achievements is an achievement.
No, it's the kind of thing that I know what it's about. It's a game that values things that aren't necessarily valued. It's
an old school kind of gameplay.
It's really like old school, not necessarily in how it presents things, but like how obtuse it is. Well, where you know you got to figure stuff out. It almost works to its detriment since you can play it blind if you play it enough.
People play Rock Band controllers. And it's interesting because the old school game style was these games would be 2 to 4 hours long and you could just beat it like, you know, one thing, whatever. And like, you just play it over and over again until you mash, get high scores and stuff. This game kind of echoes back to the fact that each level design, especially if you like Undead Barrett for the first time, you really start to master the area through repetition and figuring out how to fight all the different enemies. And the same with kind of the boss, it's kind of fast as one of the few games where it kind of teaches you how to play it. It's cruel and unfair, but not in like a way that's... Well, it's cruel, but it's not necessarily unfair.
I was just saying, yeah. Unfair is the word
It is unfair because sometimes they really do just like give you the middle finger. Like, stuff like curses, for example, which they kind of remove in Bloodborne, they're just kind of there to screw with you. Like, there's no reason for you to be cursed except to screw with you, which means you have like half health and it's impossible to find the purging stone if you don't know what you're doing in the game, you know? But it is, for the most part, it is fair. And
no, like I said, I plan on playing it eventually. I just decided to buy Mortal Kombat 10 with my paycheck instead of
We need to talk about that game too.
But it's, you know, like I said, I plan on playing it eventually. I just haven't, you know, finance hasn't caught up, and I gotta find a job and stuff like that.
You know, you're telling you, you're gonna be doing stuff for me full time for the White Noise video YouTube. I'm starting that pretty soon. All
right. So
for those who
get my money. So
I'm not saying it's like an internship. You're not paid necessarily. I'm not making any money either. I'm decently in debt right now from this show, from the mic, the programs, and stuff. But anyways, it'll pay itself back later, obviously. So I started playing Bloodborne today, right? And it's funny because it's a completely different style game, and I tried to adapt to it, right? Tried playing the style, so I use like the longer, you can like the short weapon, the long weapon, essentially, right? You know, so I was using the long weapon, I was doing a lot of power attacks, you know, and it was interesting. But I was absolutely getting handed to by the boss and some of these big crowds. The second I go back to playing like the short weapon, quick attacks, I started rocking through it, beat the boss, no problem, easy, first boss ever. And it's kind of interesting to me, like, this game preaches that it's completely from Dark Souls, and people play Dark Souls have trouble. I was a guy who used sword and shield, I was a heavy, you know? And yet, I find this game easiest as a quick guy, using a lot of the same tactics I use, except evasion instead of dodging, but the same tactics I learned from Dark Souls. So for a game that wants me to play a different style that's not like Dark Souls, I'm best at it when I play it most like Dark Souls.
Yeah, and how far into it are you?
Like I said, I started today.
I was gonna say, might change with, maybe. When swords actually start doing damage, or, you know.
Oh, no, I think everything. The cool thing with these games is, you'll die more probably at the beginning, and then probably somewhere in the middle, more than any other part of the game. But it's just interesting because, like, I learned things through playing the game. If you shoot the guy in the face, for example, or, like, right when they're, like, attacking you, you can then only use R1, which is your just normal short-range attack. Only using that will do the most damage, right? I think it's called, like, a visceral attack. That's the one that does most damage. It took me forever to figure that out, you know? I didn't know, like, where the guy you could, like, repair stuff was until way too long in the game, you know? And even the interesting was, you cannot level up, essentially, until you either find knowledge, which you're not going to find, or you fight the boss and lose once, and then they let you to level up. So I actually almost didn't level up at all before killing the first boss, interesting enough.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see how that game will go. But Mortal Kombat X, you started playing it. What are your thoughts? Did you beat the story?
I beat the story, yeah.
You've been playing online some of this, trying out?
I have been playing online. I've been watching some streams now. I've actually, I beat the campaign and maybe put 3 extra hours into it, just learning, you know. I think I learned Cassie Cage. I learned a couple combos on her, you know, sat there for, you know, a good hour in the training facility, or whatever you want to call it, a practice mode.
The real question is, when we play later today, can you beat me?
Maybe. I wouldn't put money on it, but you know what is it? I was closer than I thought I would be when we last played, and I didn't own the game then. So
it's interesting because I haven't been playing at all, but when I did play, I think through 42 or 43 online matches, I was like, I don't know, like 30 and like 13 or something like that, you know? So I had a pretty impressive record, I think, for a person who never really played the last Mortal Kombat.
Well, really quick, let me ask you a question that doesn't really effing matter. What'd you think of the campaign?
I think they did a much better job integrating the characters in the story and fights. So essentially, like, what I'm saying is, like, you're not just fighting Baraka and Shiva randomly throughout like you did in the last Mortal Kombat game, where it's like, we need you to fight someone. Baraka, just appear! Because that's what happened, like, Mortal Kombat, I guess, 9, technically, you know? 2011 one. And even that was and the thing is, I like the story of the original trilogy better, but I don't like the way they integrated the fights into it. So the very end of the trilogy story, it's like, Raiden, you are a bad guy, and then you kill Liu Kang as Raiden. All that stuff was stupid. I thought it was really silly and stupidly done, right? This game, everything's done really well, I think, for the most part. Maybe say what you want about Scorpion's encounter with Sub-Zero and the temple is kind of dumb, you know? But, like, for the most part, and I don't really still know why Scorpion's...
What do you mean? Like, he just fights him before he gets a chance to explain?
Yeah.
But, like...
oh, no, Frost is an idiot. No! Or, like, even Scorpion. Why Scorpion's, like, completely fine now, human being, good guy-ish? They never explain that. But for the most part, I do kind of like this story better because the integration with the fights is better.
Yeah, no, and I guess the actual story content is secondary. I mean, you know, there's some coming of ageness to it, a romance that is like so effing inconsequential between Jackie Briggs and Takeda.
Hey, let's take all these characters and give them kids, and even like Kenshi. So Kenshi, I I wasn't even sure Kenshi was a character in a past game, and I figured out why, right? So, in 2, he appeared in, I think, one of the Mortal Kombat games, right? I think, like, Deadly Alliance, you know, was his first appearance. I can't remember which one, right? And then he was in Annihilation, and he was in another one I can't remember the title of, because they're all stupid titles for a little while. And he has a different appearance, and I think that's why it threw me for a loop. But it's funny, he's like, oh yeah, that's Kenshi's kid or whatever. That's their kid, you know? And it's just like, oh, that's their kid, you know? Let's make Johnny Cage and Sonya have a thing. Well, because they're the only two characters alive. And then they'll divorce, obviously. And it's because Sonya is the, you know,
I didn't mind that because I appreciated what it's trying. I mean, it's funny that as bad as that story was, it's still about 90%. It's better than 90% of the games I play
these days. Absolutely, yeah.
And it just kind of pains me sometimes when I hear people criticize it. Just because...
Well, for a fighting game, it's a great story. For a normal game, this is not the story you want, but at least, like, so the integration of everything is done well.
Yeah, and I like a lot of it, what it does. I mean, I actually was really interested in just some of the stuff it did. Like, the Kotal Kahn chapter, which is the second chapter of the game. I remember you asked me about that one. I thought it was really cool, just, like, what it was and what it ended up being and stuff. And
so, here's my main issue, right? I hate everything to do with the younger four in the story. Because, like, it's so dumb, like, how, like, okay, yes, it's cool that, you know, Jackie Briggs is gonna, like, you know, defeat, Ermac, because he's the one who ripped apart Jax's arms. That's a cool callback,
They didn't really do a good job at explaining it, but yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, things like, that's the thing, about, like, if you're me, you know that. If you're you, you don't necessarily know that.
I knew
that, yeah. But, like,
mostly, I knew that, yeah. I played, you know.
Yeah, obviously, you played the last one, but I'm trying to say, I don't think everyone knows that, for example, right, you know? And that's what's kind of funny about the game is, like, there's a lot of moments where it's, like, you know, all the three different kids, you know? It's like, okay, this chapter... Because every single chapter but the last one, Cassie Cage got her ass kicked. But she's the one who defeats, you know, Shinnok at the end? What? Like, that's kind of dumb to me.
Like, I liked Cassie Cage a lot. I don't know, that's just...
She has, like, the interesting fatality with the selfie.
Yeah.
But,
I may have used.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, like... She gets her ass kicked the whole story, and then the end, she's the one who defeats him. Oh, Johnny Cage, his power that passed through. And...
The story felt kind of short, I thought. If it were longer...
5 hours, maybe 6 hours.
Not that I'm expecting them to make a 20-hour campaign. I realize that those are fewer and far between these days. But...
By the way, any fights, any people you fought against you particularly had trouble against?
No, not really. I bruised right through it. I mean,
like, none that you maybe, like, tried, like, 2 or 3, 4 times?
No, I don't remember any of that I was stuck on. When I played Mortal Kombat 9, that campaign, you know, there was the first Shao Kahn encounter, for instance. There's the Raiden one before the last one. I mean, there was several ones that were soft bars of some kind. But this one, I don't know. I didn't have any trouble with any of them.
The ones I had no trouble with any of them because I've played this game too much. People keep saying the Ermac sections are really hard. That's why I was kind of curious.
That's the one where I noticed that there was a slight spike up, but, like, I mean, I've still played this game too much. I mean, I had no problem with it.
I think I have, like, it's interesting.
Ermac's easy, just don't stay on the ground.
I have almost every achievement you can get without playing online, because some of them were just, like, winning 10 in a row. I got to 7 in a row, and I just gave up on that one because I lost after that. I'm not going to get a 10-hit combo with every character. That's too much dedication, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do all the King of the Hill respect point stuff or the hit whatever 1,000. I've gotten a lot of the achievements, including all the, like, 50 brutalities, every fatality of every character, every X-ray of every character, played every character variation. So I think I can say I've seen every character what they can do, and I really do like the way that different characters realize, and yet, even not someone who's never watched a single meta, you know, game, Mortal Kombat maybe ever, except a little bit of Evo, I can already tell you what I think the best characters in the games are. Like, which ones will be used in Evo the most, you know?
Right, just
in
playing I kind of looked at a tier list, so I know who's kind of good.
Like, okay, so I've never looked at a tier list, right? I think number one's going to be Ninjutsu Scorpion.
Yeah, he actually might get a nerf.
Nimble Reptile.
He's top 6.
I think the one version of, the cowboy guy. Gunslinger Aaron Black.
It's not Gunslinger. It's one of his other ones. Because Gunslinger is the one that looks cool.
Oh, not Gunslinger. It's not Gunslinger. I can't remember.
There's an Arrow Black variation. It's top 7.
Okay, the one, I don't use him at all. I use Mystic Ermac, but I'm pretty sure the Master of Souls Ermac is really high.
Mystic's the highest Ermac, but I don't...
Mystic's the highest Ermac? I feel like Master of Souls is the highest potential for combos.
Yeah, but, like, Mystic's got, like, it's the range game, you know, you'll never be at a disadvantage just because he can kind of stop almost any approach.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting then. I wasn't really expecting that as much. Devorah, Venomous Devorah looks amazing.
There's a couple, I forget which Devorah. There's more than one.
Saskatana, Brawler, Cassie Cage.
Actually, the Cassie Cage that's up top is Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah. Huh,
interesting. Hollywood, I think it's Cassie Cage is really good. Cassie Cage is really good in this game. There's Piercing Molina, Buzzsaw, Kung Lao, and another one. And one of Takeda's is really good.
It's probably the Chain Whip one.
Lasher.
Yeah, it's probably Lasher.
So, like I said, I've seen a lot of these. Like, I'm pretty sure like they're
and then,
really good.
Then there's, I think, all three Kung Jin variations are, you know. In the
because
top
Kung Jin's
one.
Always great. Kung Jin's never not great. I'm pretty sure Reptile, his other variations, I'm sure, are pretty decent. Because Reptile, I think.
Nimble is just, it's interesting because all they really did is copy and pasted Injustice with the Flash.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty much all they did with him. And, I don't know. It is what it is.
And I'm pretty sure if anyone Injustice, figures out, so. Like, Shinnok can be very good.
I wouldn't count on it just because, you know, Shang Tsung was never really good.
Well, Shinnok has a couple move sets that are very cheese, in my opinion. Like, the people who are the most cheese online use Shinnok, they use Sub-Zero, they use Scorpion, and they use my guy, Ermac, probably.
Let's see. In terms of cheese, who's cheesy? Jackie Briggs is cheesy.
She has the range, is pretty insane. Her zoning game is very good.
Yeah.
What's a random question? What would you say is your favorite, like, fighting game? Or the one you ever got the best
favorite
at?
Fighting game? It's hard to not go with some of the Super Smash Bros. I grew up with Soul Calibur, and I like Soul Calibur a lot.
Which character?
Soul Calibur 2, I was a... I had a couple ones. I mean, I played that game a lot. Raphael was one that I really liked a lot. I had a GameCube, so, I mean, of course, I was playing Link 80% of the time.
I'm letting this go a little long because I want to talk about video games for once.
That's fine. I'm trying to think. Like, Soul Calibur, I tried Nightmare. I wasn't really good at it. I mean, that's pretty much it. I can't remember who else.
I'm always about the Yoshimito because he just had that awesome sword and he just looks so cool. I always show, like, whenever those games, like, tech and stuff, whatever,
I was
the coolest guys.
The one that I did learn, like, you know, that I sat there for, you know, like, a weekend trying to learn. I did try to learn Cervantes.
So the one game I probably had, so Smash Bros. Melee, obviously, I played way too much as a kid, and I still play it in college. And I actually won one round of a competitive tournament at Smash for getting my ass handed to me in round two on the campus one, because people should, I don't know how to do all that really good stuff. The game I got really good at, though, right, probably of all of them, even though I had, like, the Mortal Kombat roots and stuff, UMVC 3, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, I really got good at, and I played maybe 45, 50 hours of the multiplayer, honestly, online, just that. And the characters I really like using, Virgil, because Virgil's the best character. I don't know if you have much familiarity.
I don't, but...
Yeah, know. Virgil's the best character in the game. Hulk.
I know what Marvel is. I know what
Capcom and then I use Hulk, and I use Dormammu, and then sometimes I use Hawkeye a lot. So those are my guys, and anyone who plays the game, that was the one I really got into. And I kind of actually keep, like, debating getting, like, a fighting stick. And yet, I just can't see myself devoting the time to really learning all the nuances. Especially Mortal Kombat. There's 75 characters you can essentially use with the different variations.
And these days, too, I mean, because of what... just controllers, they, you know, there's a lot of science that goes into these controllers. And I think that, like, you know, they're optimized about as well as you could have hoped at this point, so...
Yeah, so, before we go, I guess... anything you're really looking excited to, I guess, coming out sometime in the future or soon?
Oh, like I said, I mean, I'm a free man. I'm you know, between World of Warcraft and what I've already got, I mean, it'll probably be a while.
I can't believe you get back into World of Warcraft. I'm never going to touch
that
game.
Look, man, I'll have you know that outside of actually buying Draenor, I haven't spent a dime on it.
And, oh, my Hearthstone.
Yeah, I've spent a good
The
money.
Most expensive free game that you enjoy without... like, these. I know a lot of people who spend money on Hearthstone. Unlike other free-to-play games, Hearthstone's the one people spend money on. Realize they know, like, they actively understand that they're spending money in a game they should be not spending money on, and they do it anyways. That's the game above all other free-to-plays.
I haven't gotten into the triple digits in terms of my Hearthstone spending. I know for sure I haven't gotten into the triple digits, but I mean, it's the kind of thing of like, we'll buy a pack today, why not? And like, you know, hey, you know, we'll go ahead and like I said, I don't spend a lot of money on it just because I'm already at a point where I don't need to spend money.
I kind of already know it. I have a lineup of what I want to do in the future. I'm going to be playing GTA forever. I just got the level 50, which means I can now mug my friends and call airstrikes for days. I have a lot of money on that game now from all the heists, which is really exciting. I have, like, helicopters.
Yeah, and you know, that's not that much different than Hearthstone if you think about it, but, you know, go on.
But the thing is, I never paid money. You can buy online cash. I've never done that, though. I've just played the game for fun. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's one of those, like, you're right, you have to, like, level up, whatever. But since that's just a multiplayer component, which is just the open world sandbox compared to a single player, you know? And you can't level up through money. You can only level up through playing.
Yeah, and I understand. And, like, look, we don't have to talk that much about Hearthstone. Just
because, oh, yeah, because we've had conversations.
We've had this conversation, yeah. And I can't relate because I've been with it from the beginning. I've never been behind.
Anyways, so I'm going to play GTA for everybody. I'm pretty much, this is what I'm looking at, okay? I'm going to be playing Bloodborne until I beat it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play The Witcher 3. Hopefully, I'm going to be able to finish Bloodborne because I'm going to be on trip stuff. I'm hoping I'll finish Bloodborne before Witcher 3 comes out. I'm going to play Witcher 3 immediately because I love The Witcher 2.
Actually, I'll go ahead and say this really quick. I might go ahead and do the Bioshocks. Really?
Oh, soon. You ever played before?
Never played the Bioshocks. I bought them when they were on Steam for like $10 for both of them.
Do you know who Ayn Rand is?
Ayn Rand? I know of her.
we'll kick David off another week, and after you beat them, we'll have a long conversation about two of my favorite games ever on the 360. I love both. I pretend 2 never happened, even though 2 has a great DLC called Minerva's Den, which is way better than the actual game itself. It's no longer on the market, but I think you get the PC still.
I don't know, like, I'm probably not gonna get Infinite anytime soon unless, you know, you let me play it on whatever system you've got.
But see, that, they're mine, though. I'm weird about letting people buy
my games.
How much
do you want me to play it, though?
But it's mine. That answers the question, pretty much. I really, like I said, Bioshock's really something special, especially.
Yeah,
anyways,
Bioshock's got a 96 on Metacritic. That's
incredible.
That's eye-opening.
Yeah, that, I think, is always funny. The games I hold is kind of the highest esteem, you know? Obviously, I love GTA 5. Obviously, I love Skyrim. And obviously, I love, like, Last of Us, you know? But it's like, Fallout 3, Portal 2, and Bioshock have this, like, very special place in my heart for what they did. And also Gears of War for different reasons, because, you know, chain-stomping and curb-stomping people were just amazing. But, so anyways, like, so I beat Bloodborne, Witcher 3, Dying Light, I just want to do everything. My dad bought the game.
What?
Took forever to 100% that game, right?
So what is it? That's 11 days for Witcher 3?
Yeah, 11 days. So I should be Bloodborne then. Like, Witcher 3, Dying Light, because my dad bought a copy, I just didn't want to buy it myself.
I've heard mixed things about Dying Light.
And then after I beat Dying Light, I'm going to go stay in the zombie mode, play State of Decay and the Xbox One. And then I'm probably just going to be playing a bunch of games to get me easy 1,000 points to boost my achievement score until Arkham Knight comes out. The Xbox One makes it really easy because everything's 1,000 points. And Arkham Knight should be a lot of fun. I don't know how I feel about the three characters, but it should be a lot of fun.
I don't know. I've got enough cachet in the actual franchise. City was great. Asylum was great. I haven't played Origins to say it was bad, so...
Oh, see, you're the best of it. You haven't played the bad one, so you're set. Just pretend Origins never happened. That's what people tend to do with some of these things.
But... at least I want to play the Deathstroke boss fight, because I've heard that that's actually a peak in...
The Electrocutioner box fight's actually just as good for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
Can I spoil it for you?
You can. You can not spoil it for our listeners? I mean...
I'll just won't say anything. I'll show you the video immediately after we're done, but that fight, it's really funny. But anyways, that's all the time we got for the show today. We went extra long because, like I said, I love video games. This is my passion. We don't get to talk about it because David only plays Halo and Destiny. Incorrectly plays Destiny. But alright, I'm Billy White.
I'm Seth the Juniac.
See you next week, everyone.